I used to binge watch it before binge watching was a thing. See that? Because I am a 24 hipster.
It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 221. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. Matt and I jump on the bandwagon to discuss the Super Bowl, including how good historically the Denver defense is, what we think of Cam Newton's press conference, how we might react after losing, and our favorite commercials. After 25 minutes of nonsense, we then discuss BYU hoops, football news, and some Cougars trying to make the pros. Also, who wins a cage match between Batman Jason Bourne and Jack Bauer? Find out. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @BYU_RiseShout, on Facebook at facebook.com/RiseAndShout, and listen to us right now. Rise and Shout podcast. Matt, what's up?
What's going on, man?
We're doing this remotely. Neither of us are at home. You are, I believe, enjoying Mardi Gras.
Yeah. I don't know if that's how I describe it, but I am in New Orleans.
So you're podcasting live from Mardi Gras.
I am in New Orleans, and it is Fat Tuesday today. So there you have it. Both of those things are true.
Okay. You are not right now on whatever the street is.
It's Bourbon Street.
Bourbon Street.
I have been to Bourbon Street. I am not there right now. I look out my hotel window. I see a McDonald's and a little bit of traffic, a couple of cars.
I see some tennis courts out of mine. I'm in Visalia, California at the World Ag Expo.
That sounds like fun.
If you want something more exciting than Mardi Gras, Matt, it's the World Ag Expo.
Oh, I believe that. I believe that.
Yeah, you best believe it, friend. You best believe it. Well, hey, we should probably start off by talking about something not related to our business travels.
But it's fascinating. It's riveting. I'm sure the people are just on the edge of their seats.
Here we are a couple minutes in, and they're going, wow, if they would just talk about what they do for work more.
That would be so much fun.
Yes. I get the same look at home when I talk about it. So, Matt, the Super Bowl did not go down like we had predicted.
I think what we've really cemented this season is that I am terrible at predicting playoff games.
Yeah, that is true.
Awful.
The only one you've called right was the Patriots first round game.
And let's be honest, I really only called it that way because I'm a homer.
Yes.
But I believe every other thing I said about the playoffs was incorrect.
I think you missed every other game but that one.
And I think I even missed things I said about the game, not just the outcome.
Yes.
Like, oh, well, this team's going to rush the ball well, and then they didn't.
Didn't you have the Cardinals beating the Panthers?
No. No, I think I did pick
that
one.
No, right,
you did. I've had the Panthers making it all the way in.
So you did
but I
have...
had the Panthers winning the whole thing.
Yeah.
So I was right on that side. I had the Panthers getting to the big show.
Well, I thought the best two teams in the league were the Cardinals and the Panthers. I was wrong. I mean, the best team is Denver.
Yeah, so it's the Panther. Really, the two best teams in the NFL made it to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think it ends up working out that way. So, Matt, what's your top thought after watching that Super Bowl? Biggest takeaway as you watched? I mean, you and I have both watched a lot of Super Bowls where, besides being college football fans or pro football fans, what was your top thought?
I don't think anybody talked enough about the Denver defense coming into this game. And I don't mean to say that there wasn't any talk of it, because there was some. But that was the story of their season. That defense is what made the difference for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
They were very, very good.
Yes, absolutely. That they shut down two games in a row, two of the best quarterbacks in the league, and two of the best offenses. I mean, the Carolina offense, by some measures, was the best, or if not one of the best. So they scored two touchdowns, basically, right? One literally, one they gave the artist formerly known as Peyton Manning just a couple of yards to have to get in. Matt, my top thought is the fact that, so over the course of my football watching life, I have only seen two Super Bowl champions win. I should say three. Three Super Bowl champions where I felt like the quarterback had almost nothing to do with them winning the Super Bowl. And those are, and the second, the second one I'm going to say here isn't actually true because he played a pivotal role in the Super Bowl itself. But let's start with the 2000 Ravens and Trent Dilfer. I mean, I think they could have won it with me playing QB. Okay, that's ridiculous. But I don't think they needed much of a QB. The next year, the Patriots with Tom Brady. Until the Super Bowl game, quite frankly, he didn't do anything. The playoff game they won was with Drew Bledsoe.
Yep.
So this is the third team I've watched where I felt like, even those Manning teams where he, Eli, I mean, where he went crazy, right? I mean, he's the one that, you know, kind of delivered. Their defense did great stuff too, but Peyton Manning didn't do jack squat. He was terrible.
Yeah, you were just hoping he wasn't going to blow it.
Yes.
Throw a pick, or I mean, because a couple of those passes,
well, he really ducks. He dropped two balls when somebody touched him. You know, and you could say, well, so did Cam Newton. Cam Newton was getting hammered all night. The Denver offensive line gave Manning a clean pocket most of his dropbacks.
Yeah. I mean, I wondered at times if we were going to find out later that Newton was really hurt. I mean, he kept grimacing, grabbing at that left shoulder, didn't dive for that fumble. You know, I still wonder.
What do you make of that not diving? It was strange when it happened, but as I've watched the replay, I'm kind of like, I don't know, fumble situations are tough, and there is a plausible explanation that he thought it was going to move, right?
Well, but really, but it's a business decision, right? I mean, you go back in time to Drew Brees playing for the Chargers, dives for a loose ball on the goal line, busts up his shoulder, and they don't think he's ever going to play again. Now, granted, Brees came back and is now, you know, obviously become Drew Brees of the New Orleans Saints. But at the time, they thought that was bad. And I think if you're Cam Newton, your shoulder's already jacked up, you see, I think it was DeMarcus Ware landing on top of that football, and you think, do I really want to put this arm in there?
Yeah. And that could have gone through his head. It's hard to say what goes through somebody's head in a split second, right?
Or you look at it and you're like, oh, he's on it.
Or he's on it, or, oh, he's going to run into it, and maybe I'll jump. I mean, there's a thousand things it could have been. Matt, do you care how he responded in his press conference?
Not even a little bit. Yeah. I've gotten in arguments about this with people.
This, to me, is sports writers. Like, so he's going to miss your insightful questions. Like, so how does it feel to lose the biggest game of your life?
Well, and the thing that bothered me about it, right, was they asked him a couple of questions. He answered. You know, what do you think they did different? This, you know, and he said, well, it wasn't really a thing. We didn't execute. I threw some bad passes. We turned the ball over. Those types of things. He said all of that. And then they got to a point where they were asking them, and these questions drive me nuts. Can you talk a little bit about, or tell us how disappointed you are? And he said, we lost. And then they kept asking him that question rephrased. It was that three, four times. And I think we've talked about this. I don't see a reason why the professional athletes are required to do media availability after these games. I don't think reporters should be in locker rooms. I think after a big loss like this, I think you just leave the losing team alone. You know, maybe a couple players come out, but I don't think anybody should be made to do it. And I don't understand what we're trying to get out of these interviews. Cam Newton's not going to give you anything insightful. Yeah,
what is he going to say?
It's a total waste of time.
If he does anything but give absolutely generic answers, it becomes a story, right? If he comes out and blames a teammate, it becomes a story. Cam Newton is a loser. He blames the teammate, right?
It's a no-win situation for him.
Yes.
He comes out and he gives the canned responses. Everybody's still, they're going to say the same things they're saying now. He came out, he didn't really answer the questions. It's part of his job. You know, and I saw an interview today where they're talking to guys that have played professional sports, like, well, it's part of the drill. He should come out and just answer the questions and give the pat answers. Why? Nobody cares. Nobody's going to replay that. Nobody's going to watch that again in 2 months. Nobody. It's a total waste of time. It's a it's the media trying to they're going to make him pay for it. They're going to punish him for not participating in their process, which is stupid.
All offseason they're going to punish him, and heck, they were already punishing him for being outside of the stereotype that they particularly like. Now again, if I were him and I was or I was his friend, I would have told him to do everything like these professionals are, just so that you can walk away from it, right? Without it becoming the story. But gosh, I'm an emotional guy. I don't think I would want to. I think I would end up saying or doing dumb stuff in front of reporters right after a game. I mean, you've seen me lose stuff. I'm not great after a loss.
You are not. You're not good after even a team you like loses.
No. So remember we tried to do those podcasts right after losses?
Yeah, oh, I remember some of those years, like the Jake Heaps Utah game. Yeah, this stuff's bad.
Yep.
So. You know, but and you look at the other thing is this is a guy. I mean, and a young guy too. I mean, how old is Cam Newton? 26.
Yeah.
So you're looking at a guy who has, at the age of 26, he's riding on the top of his profession. You know, and has just suffered one of the most devastating professional disappointments that he ever will face. Right? The worst thing that can happen now is that he loses a Super Bowl a second time. And so to want to dig into his head or make him sit there and listen to these questions, you know, and then there's this whole thing about could he hear the Broncos press conference and the celebrating in the other room and just didn't want to listen to it. I mean, I don't know. But I feel like it's such a waste of time.
Yeah. And I don't know if he could hear the other guy or not. Maybe someday we'll see that. But Matt, let me. One of the reasons why you should be extra ticked, okay? Of the 10 youngest quarterbacks to ever start a Super Bowl, how many of them ever got there again?
Oh, it's going to be a small number, isn't it?
It's not many. Okay, so you look at the...
So Brady's on that list, right?
Brady's on the list. Montana is on that list. Aikman is on that list. Okay, those are the guys that made it back. Joe Namath, Super Bowl III, famous, right? He was 25. Didn't ever get back. Colin Kaepernick a couple years ago was 25. Does it look good like he's going to make it back anytime soon?
I don't even know if he's going to be on a roster.
Drew Bledsoe was 24. When in Super Bowl 31. Now, he made it back as a backup, right? Have you ever heard of David Woodley, Super Bowl 17 for the Dolphins?
Yikes.
Ben Roethlisberger, okay, so that's a good one. Dan Marino. This is the reason why you're ticked if you're Cam Newton. There is no guarantee he ever sees this game again. Injury, right. Team... disintegrates. There is no guarantee you ever do this again. You see Tom Brady or Manning make it multiple times, or Joe Montana, and think, oh, all the great ones make it multiple times. No, they don't. Steve Young made it once, right? A lot of people thought Jim McMahon would be there multiple times, you know, as a starter. That's why you're ticked, man, when you lose. You get one shot at it.
Well, and I think he knows that, you know, with all the attention that he'd been receiving, that, you know, the Sharks come out at that point, right?
Oh, yeah.
And
oh,
it's yes, not like the Panthers were exposed. I mean, they're still a really good team. They won a lot of games, everybody.
Yes.
Made it to the Super Bowl.
And over the last year and a half, they've only lost a couple of games.
And lost to the good best teams. Defense in the NFL.
Yeah, and when they got knocked out of the playoffs last year, Seattle was playing some of the best defense in the NFL.
Yeah.
So Matt, is Denver's D better than Baltimore 2000?
Yes.
I lean towards yes, but it's close. Are they better than Chicago 1985? Here's the problem with
that one's tougher for me.
It's tougher. The problem is, like, Denver shut down a very, very, very good offense, right? So did the Bears in the NFC. The Patriots team they played in 19, well, technically 86-85 season, was not a great offense. They were a very good offense, but they weren't like this Carolina offense or even like, the say, the San Francisco offense that the Bears shut down earlier in those playoffs. I don't know. It's hard to compare across areas, but can we say they're top three or four? I mean, is that safe, or do you think that's just recency bias?
I'm comfortable with maybe top five, but you definitely got to think about the potential for a recency bias here.
Yes.
You know, I mean, and the other tough part about comparing defenses across eras when you stretch all the way back to a time like the mid-80s is that offenses are so different now. The rules are a little bit different. You know, and if you get into a space where you're like, well, how would have the 1985 Chicago Bear defense have done against a Cam Newton?
Right.
You know, but that's a question somebody might ask. I don't think that's really how you draw that comparison, but it definitely makes for an interesting discussion because I don't know that the Bears 1985 defense would do to Cam Newton what the Broncos did, but this is a defense that's built a certain way to go up against a certain kind of an offense, right? So I don't know if that's really the barometer you use, but so it just the point I'm trying to make is that it's difficult to compare when you stretch out that long with the way the NFL has evolved.
So Matt, Wade Phillips, is he the poster boy for certain people should just remain coordinators?
Oh, is he not? I mean, what he did there, I mean, unbelievable, but as a head coach, did not work out for the son of a
No, Bob. No. And they're not the same skill set, right?
Nope.
Not the same skill set. So, Matt, let's turn to the most important thing about the Super Bowl. What was your favorite commercial?
So, was it just me, or were there a lot of commercials during the Super Bowl about, like, intestinal issues?
I can say the one that I think you're talking about where it was the actual intestine sitting in the stands, that my wife was like, that's the worst commercial ever.
And it looked like it, you know, and I understand there's a lot of like there's a lot of footage, a lot of what's the word I'm looking for here? It looked like it was all tied up in knots, which maybe was kind of the point. But the commercial was weird.
Yes, that commercial was absolutely weird.
There was the Doritos commercial with the baby that was good, but the one that really gave me nightmares was the puppy monkey baby. And I'm a Mountain Dew guy.
See, here's the thing. I saw a tweet about this, and I can't remember who it was, so unfortunately I can't give them credit. But basically what I think that is an ad agency creative person's cry for help. They've hit the end. They can't think of any other ideas, so let's put a baby monkey and a puppy together in one little creature.
I feel like it was one of those things where, like, let's just find three words that have nothing to do with each other, connect them somehow in this commercial, and create something that will stick to people's memory.
But I feel like if I were to pick a third of a baby to keep, I'm not keeping the butt, honestly. Right? Like, aren't you going to keep the baby's face?
Yeah, but then you're going to have the baby go up and lick that guy in the face?
No, you can't do that.
If you do that part,
okay.
You have to use
torso.
The dog's head.
Torso. Then the baby torso. And a monkey tail.
Oh, that's even weirder. A baby torso with a with a puppy head? I think you have no choice but to use the baby's butt.
Okay, maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. But
the tail was weird.
The tail, well, it's like... You gotta own.
It was like, man, you got to either stop at the waist or not.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You needed to make some choices there. I have to say, I thought it's not my favorite commercial, but the Bud Light, of course, two Mormons talking about a Bud Light commercial, that's a parody in and of itself. But when all of a sudden they turn to and say Paul Rudd is a really nice guy, and it's just Paul Rudd sitting there going, oh, I didn't know this was coming. I thought Schumer and Rogan did a good job on that commercial, but I would have to say that my favorite, and maybe this is because I have four daughters, was the Hyundai commercial with It's the First Date, and he's tracking his daughter and the guy. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, there were some good ones in there.
You know, every year I'm in advertising and marketing, right? Every year, I hear the same thing, and I heard it this year. The commercials are not as good as they were in the past. I always call BS on that. There's always about four or five really good ones, about a dozen mediocre ones, and then a bunch of crap. And that's been true forever. If anything, well, I think it's gotten a little better. At least now, I mean, you had that Avengers one, which wasn't a great commercial, but it was, you know, kind of fun because it's Ant-Man and the Hulk. I mean, at least you have stuff like that to watch.
I thought that was kind of fun. But my favorite commercial, the Bourne movie.
I knew you were going to say that. On a scale of zero to Batman, how excited are you for the Bourne movie?
I'm Bourne excited.
Is that above Batman?
It is right now.
So, okay, right now.
Let's think about this for a minute. That's what I was going to say. There we go. Here we go. All right,
let's do it. Cage fight, Batman versus Jason Bourne. And nobody say Jack Bauer, by the way. Jack Bauer gets absolutely...
No, he gets owned by both of them.
By both of these people. So any of you 24 people, stop. I don't even want to hear it on Twitter.
No, I love 24. I think I saw every episode. Okay? I used to binge watch it before binge watching was a thing. See that? Because I am a 24 hipster. All right? So
you're a 24 hipster. You're a lot of things.
I binge watched that before binge watching was cool.
That's right.
I watched 24 before you even heard about it. Anyway, so Bourne wins.
Over Batman?
Yes.
Over Batman?
Yes.
You're crazy.
You're crazy. You're crazy.
Batman would have some gadget, like an anti-Bourne gadget.
It's not going to matter. The gadget is not going to matter. Bourne was trained for it, and he doesn't even know it yet. It hadn't even been invented, and Bourne is ready to defeat it. It's not going to matter.
I was so excited for that. They hadn't even announced a name of the movie yet. Which, by the way, naming it Jason Bourne is phenomenally a good job. Did you ever see the one with Jeremy Renner?
Yes,
I thought that was okay. I know a lot of people didn't like it. I thought it was fine. It just wasn't as good as the ones with Matt Damon.
No, Matt Damon he plays that part so well. Yeah. And what's interesting is that, you know, the books, I love the books, but it's a totally different story.
Oh, it's totally different. I do love the books, but the books are Cold War, right?
Right. And the story is it's him and this other assassin kind of chasing each other around. But it's set in a different time period. It's just different. But the way they've set this up and the way he plays that part, I just, you know, there's two series of movies, and we've talked about my love for Batman, but there's two series of movies that I absolutely just can't get enough of. And it's the Batman movies, you know, starting, you know, the Dark Knight and those movies.
Yes.
And the Bourne series.
Yes. All right.
If the Bourne movies are on TV, if I'm flipping channels and I've discovered that one of those movies is on, my plans for the next 2 hours go out the window. It does not matter what I thought I was about to do. I'm now watching this movie.
So, Matt, we're 20-some-odd minutes into this podcast. We haven't even talked about BYU. And we're going to keep not talking about BYU because we've got a tweet bag question.
Hey, the longer we can stall talking about hoops, the happier I'm going to be.
Yeah, and everyone listening. So, Matt, it's time for the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
BYU fan, that's at BYU Pilot on Twitter, asks, will either of you be seeing Deadpool in the theaters? Matt, do you even know who Deadpool is?
Do I know who Deadpool is? Yes. Do you know why he wears a red suit?
Are you going to tell us?
I think it's so that the other guys can't see him bleed. I think that's the line from the movie.
I believe it is. He also hashtag first world LDS problems in Tweetbag. Of course, he is referencing that this movie is rated R. And you and I are on record as having never seen an R-rated movie in our lives, both of us.
Nope. See, so I'm going to have to wait till this one comes out.
On Vid Angel?
Or the local theater that edits it for you. Aren't there theaters that do that?
Yes.
There's any near my house.
But if this were the Varsity Theater circa 1998.
That's what I need. The Varsity Theater. That's what I was thinking of. I need it to come out of the Varsity Theater, then I'll go see it.
You're ridiculous. I am not planning on seeing this one in the theater. I'm an X-Men guy, but Deadpool was never a comic. It kind of got big after I got out of comics. I'm a little interested, but I'm not as interested as probably most other comic book fans are.
Yeah, I'm not likely to see this one in the theater. Shocker, right?
You don't see anything in the shoot. Will you see Bourne in the theater?
Probably more than once.
Okay. All right. Good.
And because that's a movie I'll just go to by myself.
Who went with you on the original one like 4 times in the theater?
Oh, that was the best. Do you remember that?
Yes.
We just kept going back.
Because didn't you see it first? Because didn't you take me and say, you have to see this movie? And you had seen it like the day before? Yeah. Am I remembering this right?
Yeah. I'd seen it. And then I think I came over to your apartment. I was like, hey, you have to see this movie. We need to go back. And we went back the next day. And then I went and got, I had not read the books at that point. And we went straight from the movie theater to Borders or Barnes & Noble. They used to have these things called bookstores. Bookstores. By the way, I've passed a Barnes & Noble tonight. Crazy. Anyway, that was that was awesome.
That was Bourne Identity came out in 2002. I know the internet was around then, but it wasn't the same. I didn't know much about it, and I was a Matt Damon fan even, but boy, has it been 14 years since that movie came out?
If you go back and you look at clips from the first movie and just look at Matt Damon now and then, it's crazy.
It's like a president before and after.
And in the later movies, he's just jacked compared to how big
he was
in
the first one. He's like a skinny guy in the first one.
Yeah.
All right, Matt, shall we talk about some BYU sports?
We probably should get into that since the whole reason for this podcast is BYU sports.
Yeah, we're going to get a few complaints about not talking about BYU.
Just fast forward.
What I say to those people is, what are you doing listening to this podcast if you don't like our non-BYU stuff?
Or just fast forward through. That's fine. Yeah, I'm going to say real slowly so that those of you who are listening to it quickly. We are now talking about BYU sports.
Wow, that was really good. Thanks.
See, at high speed, that's going to sound totally normal.
What if I do this if they're listening to high speed right now? What are they going to do?
You just made it weird.
Yep. Yes, I did. That's what I do. So, Matt, it's time for the CougarFan.com Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News.
So, Matt, the volleyball team swept Santa Barbara 6 sets. That was number 10, UC Santa Barbara. They have Princeton and NJIT, New Jersey Institute of Technology, I think.
Sweet.
On the road. They've got a bunch of road games coming up over the next couple weekends. Cal Baptist after that. They're starting to get on a roll again. Just in time. The women's basketball team, Matt, continues their incredible run, wins over Pacific and St. Mary's. I wonder what they'd feel like to beat Pacific and St. Mary's in the same weekend. Huh.
I bet you it felt
I guess we'll never know on the men's side. They're rolling, Matt.
That stings a little bit.
Hey, it's, you know what stung? Watching that Pacific game.
What stung. Okay, we'll get to that, but
We'll get to that in a minute. That's what stung. Let's go to Matt. Cougars in the pros with the first pick in the NFL draft. Robertson Daniel makes the Journal Courier Online. It's a Appleton, Wisconsin newspaper. I used to live there, Matt. Great story about him trying to make the Packers.
Yep.
That's all you got to say is yep. You don't want to add anything else? That's your top-level analysis? Yep. Thanks, Matt. Thanks for showing up to the podcast. Robertson Daniel played defensive back on one of the best BYU defenses ever. True or false?
Well, sure. I mean, how highly do you need to be rated to be one of the best ever?
Is it top five?
Top two.
Top three.
Yeah. Maybe.
You're killing me. You're killing me, Smalls. We had a decent season that year. We beat Boise State that year almost because of our defense. Remember that goal line stand?
That goal line stand was pretty sweet.
Anyway, I think Robertson Daniel, I really thought he would make the pros. I'll be very happy to see it if he can stick with the Packers.
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be great.
Mitch Matthews' Deseret News story appeared this week about him getting ready for the NFL draft. Matt, any chance he gets drafted?
No.
Any chance he makes an NFL roster next year?
I think he probably he's a guy that could get onto a practice squad or maybe get activated at some point. But you know, you have to kind of step back, and it's not a great way to do it. But you can kind of step back and you look at a guy like a Jordan Leslie or a Cody Hoffman, you know, or even if you think back to like a Todd Watkins, and you think about what happened to these guys at the next level. And where do you think Mitch Matthews' skills translate to the NFL when compared to those players? So I think he's got some things he'd need to work on. You know, and there were some things that Jordan Leslie does very well that Mitch Matthews doesn't do as well that I think are important in the NFL. You know, it's tough for me to say that I think he will make a roster, especially say in 2016. But I think he's a guy that can hang around a practice squad and maybe get a shot.
You know what I think he needs? I think he needs like 50 pounds.
Yeah, he needs to be able to, well, here's the deal. The easy way to cover him up is you hit him at the line of scrimmage and tie him up.
Well, don't you think
he can't break loose?
If this had been another era of BYU football, don't you think they turn him into a tight end?
Maybe.
But he could have. We didn't use tight ends. So what reason would you take one of your best wide receivers and turn him into a tight end, right? You would have made him disappear. You put 40 or 50 pounds on him, all of a sudden, now I think he's an NFL possibility as a tight end, right?
Well, who was the guy, and I'm drawing a blank now, but who was the guy who was the receiver that everybody was excited about, and he showed up when you're a little bit heavy, so they just made him even heavier and put him in as a tight end?
It's not ringing a bell. One of our listeners will have to.
Somebody's going to have to tweet it. I'm drawing a blank on this guy's name. Maybe. Picture him in my head. I know exactly what he looks like.
Are you just making stuff up?
It's
okay if you are.
He hung around on some practice squads too, but I feel like we haven't had a lot
of stuff up.
Okay, then let me ask you this. When have we ever done that successfully?
I don't know. Well, Chad Lewis was a walk-on. I know they talked about.
And he was already a tight end.
Yeah, but they talked about different positions when he was there because he was a walk-on and they really had no idea where he was going to stick, right? I don't know. You could do that. They've done it. I don't know that we have done it, but other college programs have done it with big wide receivers. It's not unprecedented.
I think we fell in love with having these twin tower receivers that we thought we were going to throw the fade to all day long, and that they would be able to catch, you know, high balls, and you know, and nobody was going to be able to do anything about it. And I think we kind of fell in love with that and thought that that was going to be our bread and butter. And then we found out that some really physical, really aggressive corners were going to be able to combat that.
And NFL corners are all of that, plus they can jump out of the gym.
Yeah, I mean, you look at what's that cornerback's name from Boise State, right?
Yeah.
Is he an all-star? Is he an all-pro NFL corner?
No.
So, you know, imagine what some of these good corners in the NFL would do.
Yeah. I love Matthews. I just, to me, the path for him is tight end, and that is a long path position change there.
Or he's going to have to develop some of these skills that we're talking about. And these are things that you can learn. But either way, he probably needs a little bit of weight, and he's going to have to learn. He's going to have to learn to work through some of that. Yeah.
But good luck to him. I hope he can make it happen. I mean, Brady Hoke stayed in the NFL for how long, and I never thought he had a chance when he left. So there are guys that leave college where you don't think they've got a chance. That's not very common, but it does happen. So good luck to him. Matt, there's a bunch of former BYU basketball players that are making the rounds in Europe. The Deseret News had a good summary of that. I'm not going to go through all of them, but I will talk about a couple of them. Brandon Davies is looking really good. He's playing, where it is, I'll get down to, Italy, Serie A, Open Job Midas Varese. That's my my Italian right there.
Open Job Midas. That sounds like an economics disease.
Yes, I believe it is. He's
currently, the United States economy is suffering from open job mitis. No open job mitis.
In 12 Europe Cup games, 16.2 points on 61% shooting. including hitting some three balls, 7.2 rebounds, 1.6 assists. He's doing a good job. The bad side of that, Matt, is Tyler Hawes. He's playing with, what's that name, Obrigado?
Friends of Basketball of Spain.
Friends of Basketball of Spain or whatever. He has seen his minutes get reduced. Go check out Deseret News.
No. Tyler Hawes is with a different program now. Now he's with Rio Natura Monbus Obradoro.
Oh, that's right. You're right. No. What are you talking about? Yeah, that's a different one.
That's what this says. Yeah, this is a different club.
Is it this different club?
Man, maybe they changed their name because I think Obradorio is the town. I don't know. I don't speak Spanish.
I don't speak it apparently either. That's not actually true. So anyway, he's seen his minutes go down recently. You know, sometimes we make these flippant comments about they'll make it in Europe. There's no given in Europe either. You know what I mean? Like, there's no, like, you know, Tyler Hawes goes to Europe, he's guaranteed to become an all-star in Europe. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not like they, I mean, there's some good basketball players
over there. Oh, yeah. And a lot of good college Americans try to go over there. You know, Michael Smith went over there during part of his career, and he had good years and some down years, and he was one of the best to ever play at BYU. It's not, there are no shoo-ins even in that. Well, Matt, since we're talking about basketball, let's just say on the scale of 0 to Detmer, how excited were you after we beat St. Mary's?
Oh, Detmer.
And you were thinking, and I have the text, so don't lie to me, you're thinking they could win the conference tournament, weren't you? Weren't you?
Yeah, I think I did text that to you. Did I text
that? I'm pretty sure you did. Or maybe we said it to each other because we did talk the day after or that night or something. Then all of a sudden Pacific comes. Did you actually watch the game? Because I almost didn't. And then I ended up tuning in the second half, and I really wish I hadn't.
So this was Saturday, right?
Yeah, you were running a half marathon, right?
So I'd run a half marathon that morning, and I'd gone straight from my half marathon to my son's basketball game. So I'm not going to lie to you and tell you that I didn't doze off trying to watch this game.
Yes, well, it was a dozer. Matt, who is this team? Like, they beat a very good St. Mary's team, look phenomenal doing it, to the point where you're thinking, if this team is on, you know, as scattered as college basketball is this year, not only could they win the conference tournament, they could upset somebody in the first or second round. This could be some weird Sweet 16 team, right?
But you know what? If the right version of this team shows up, like, that could theoretically still be true. I don't know that they'll get a shot to prove that.
Yeah,
but when they're on, they seem to be pretty good. But when they're off,
oy,
it's brutal to watch.
It's bad. And against Pacific, it was both sides of the ball, offense and defense. Obviously, the point total will get people worried about the defense. But I mean the offense. But the defense was not good. There were stretches where it was like layup lines for Pacific. And obviously the three-point shot, Emery's in a big slump. Fisher, we know, can get in those slumps. Matt, we talked about this before. I don't know if it's playing off of Hawes. I don't know what it is. Kyle Collinsworth, to me, is not the same player he was last year. Like, statistically, if you look at the advanced stats, he's lesser version of himself. Is that just, do you think, the Tyler Hawes effect? Or do you think maybe he's just, it's like everybody else. This year is maybe not, maybe last year was as good as it got for him. That was the peak.
You know, I think basketball is very much a game where the way the players gel and interact with one another is absolutely key. Chemistry is huge.
Yes.
And I think that's really what we're looking at here. I think, you know, you can describe it as a Tyler Hawes effect, where the lack of one guy changes the dynamic, or just between those two players. But I think it's really it's all five. It's, you know, or however many, you know, you kind of figure in the mix of regular playing time. I think that's really what we're looking at here, is that the chemistry of this team is totally different after you remove Hawes, and the roles that people have to play and the way they interact and read off of each other and these types of things just doesn't exist the way it did last year. So it doesn't create the same opportunities for a player like Collinsworth. I think the other piece of that is that he's having to carry a little bit more and a little bit different of a load than he did before. And it's like going into a game, you don't know yet what that's going to be, because one night Emery might be on, Fisher might be on, and Collinsworth might not need to do certain things. But then when those guys are off, I feel like he presses a little bit, and the rest of the team is trying to figure out, well, who's going to step up and fill that role, and that's when they run into trouble.
Yeah, I think you just said the magic words about pressing a little bit. I think at times he puts himself in bad spots, sometimes goes into a double team, I think because he doesn't trust his teammates in big moments. And that's my subjective opinion. I don't, you know, there's no statistics to back that up. That's just a lot of watching the team and my perspective. The other part to me is Jeff Call of the Deseret News, who's been on the podcast before. He basically had a nice story about Nick Emery. We're talking about a freshman.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think we expected too much out of Nick Emery in year one?
Oh, yeah.
We did, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we thought he's going to be, Fisher gets a little better, we get a big man, I mean, and he'll kind of be Haas Light or Jackson Emery. And he's not Haas Light yet, and he's
and
not
But Haas Jackson wasn't Emery. Haas his
no,
first year.
No, he wasn't. It's not a fair comparison, but that's who we needed to replace, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is he better than Skylar Halford was last year? Yes, but if you look at the advanced stats, not by that much. I mean, he is, but Halford, we lost. One of the things we don't talk about is Halford was, Emery came and replaced Halford plus a little, and we lost Haas. It's a net negative. Yep. On the perimeter, it's a net negative. There's no way around it. The other piece is, defensively, our best defensive team has Nate Austin and Corbin Kafusi on the floor, and both of them are absolute zeros on the offensive side. Yeah. But then if you put Kyle Davies in, he's good as a one-on-one defender, but Kafusi, the way he will change the way guys drive into the hoop, take shots, that happened against St. Mary's a bunch of times, where guys threw up crazy weird shots because they were afraid of Kafusi coming from the weak side and swatting them into the third row.
Right.
I don't know. Like you said, Matt, I don't know if my opinion of them winning the tournament has changed that much, the conference tournament. I still think they've got a better than 10 or 15% chance of winning it if they get hot, but I don't think they do. Right? Are you any different?
No. And I got to a place where I got a little bit more confident with this team, but I think it's this roller coaster deal, and I don't think you can ride something like that into a conference tournament and expect to come out on top.
Well, I mean, you look at so far this year, how many 3-game win streaks do we have?
You have to look, you know, especially if you look at that, you got to think about who the teams are inside those streaks.
Yeah, our longest win streak is 4. And that culminated with Gonzaga, but that's beating Pacific, Santa Clara, and San Francisco, right? To win the conference tournament, you are likely going to have to beat, unless something strange happens, St. Mary's and Gonzaga back-to-back.
Right.
2 days in a row. We couldn't beat St. Mary's and Pacific several days apart at home. I don't know, man.
Part of the issue, you look at like the Pepperdine win, I think took a lot out of them, and then the St. Mary's win. And while this, not a real close score there at the end, but I think by the time you got to the end of that, they were gassed.
Yeah, they looked gassed, and you've got some young players on the team who this is the most intense and longest basketball they've ever played in their careers. And mm-hmm. for a couple of them, they're still less than a year off a mission.
You know, and that's one of the things that Emery talks about in the piece that you were referencing a little while ago that Jeff called it in the Des News, is this, you know, the transition for him and what he feels like is different and those kinds of things. You know, and the practice, the amount of practice, the time required to be successful, it's a big adjustment to step in here. I mean, this is a job for these guys, essentially. I mean, it's not an easy transition, even for a guy that you feel like, you know, is supposed to be, you know, the Haas light or whatever you want to call it, or, you know, fresh off a mission. I just think that you can't expect him to come in and fill all those roles immediately.
That being said, I think he's going to be great.
Down the road, I do. I'm excited about his future. Absolutely.
Yeah. And you know what we could really use? We could really use, you know, it's funny because one of the things that I love following Greg Rebell, friend of the podcast on Twitter, he does a great job. But one of the things he's been doing is defending Kyle Davies. See, I just did it. Kyle Davis, and basically saying that he is Brandon Davies statistically, though it's probably not quite true. A lot of times Davis is out at the end of games because we stop around the offense through him. But Matt, Kyle Davis, is he the issue? He seems to be getting a whipping boy from fans because of some easy shots he's missed and stuff. But is that the problem this year?
I don't even know how to isolate it. So it's difficult. It's difficult to say. I just think there's so many things at play. I feel like I don't have the answers. I feel like I'm searching, you know, like a lot of people are.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you. I'm also searching. I don't think Davis is the problem though. I think we'd be in a lot worse situation without Davis.
Yeah. And I think it's more complicated than that. But,
and I mean, Hartsock, we asked last week, is he for real? The answer turns out to be probably not, at least not yet.
Yeah, he had a good night.
He had a good night, but probably not quite there yet. Matt, we're not going to preview this week's games. They've got to win, right?
Oh, they have to win.
They got to win these. Though, actually, at this point, quite frankly, they got to win the tournament anyway, so maybe in some ways it doesn't matter except for building their confidence, right? If they could go into the tournament winning their last, you know, five games, whatever it is, six games, then I think that could make a big difference to their confidence level and going in. But in the end, they got to win those three to get in the tournament at this point, right?
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, I don't love a three-game road stretch.
I do not love a three-game road stretch. Percent chance they drop at least one of these games.
25?
I was going to say like 35. And I feel like San Francisco is the natural first one to happen, but the probably maybe the most likely is San Diego after you've been on the road twice already.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. I'm not as worried about the San Francisco game just because it's the next game.
But San Diego's bad.
Yeah, so maybe you're okay because of the order you're playing these in. If those two games were flipped, I'd be more concerned about the San Francisco game.
Of course, Pacific
game
is bad. So,
In Provo. Like, that's the part Provo that kills me. It's like, that's just...
That should have been a gimme. Should have been a gimme, Matt. So let's move on to football here for a second. There was supposed to be a massive announcement. Follow Bronco Mendenhall's coach of UVA's account. And guess what the announcement was, Matt? Taysom Hill going to Virginia? No. A series, three-game, two-for-one series with Old Dominion. Lamest announcement ever?
I just try to ignore tweets or comments related to our former football coach's current Twitter account.
What?
But I really, call me crazy, but I really don't care.
You really don't care about UVA football
and if
now?
If I'm a UVA fan, this doesn't get me going. It's Old Dominion.
Yeah. I mean, it's
like I've driven by the campus. It's Old Dominion.
Yeah. It's somebody that's regional. Huh? No?
It is. It's true. It is. It's regional. And for, you know, there are people that are probably, you know, I think there's people that know, like, UVA grads and know Old Dominion grads and these types of things. I think for Old Dominion, it's a big series.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for Old Dominion, it's great.
But if you're UVA, these are three games that you really ought to win these. So maybe you're excited because you're thinking, oh, well, here we go. We'll throw some games on the schedule to help the bowl eligibility. You know, get us a win here that's going to count towards that. And, yeah, that's exciting. Let's get back to a bowl game. So that seems to really be the focus there.
So a lot of BYU fans seem to be, like, freaking out. Matt, if Taysom leaves, forget the destination. On a scale of 0 to, I don't know what we want to put on the end of it, 0 to 100, how devastated are you? 0 being don't care, 100 devastated beyond belief.
I'm going to go ahead and say, I'm going to say 0. Because in a way, we've already lost Taysom. You know, if Taysom were to play football in 2016, I see that as a Taysom coming back. We lost Taysom in the Nebraska game.
Right.
And if he does not play football again for BYU, that's the situation we're already in today.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't feel like you 0. But it's not a huge deal to me. Like, all these BYU fans are like, oh my gosh, guy's falling. We have Tanner Mangum. Like, if there was no quarterback next year, right? If this was a couple years ago and you're going to have to go, like, get some guy that, you know, off the practice squad, if you want to say it, or get, you know, throw out, you know, Hodge or somebody who I think isn't ready for prime time yet, then yes, right? And yes, Taysom coming back, like you said, that's fantastic. You get two good quarterbacks is better than none. It's better than one, because as we've seen in the last few years, a lot of times they don't make it through the season. But if he decides to hang it up or go someplace else, to me, I don't know that it. I don't. I think it downgrades us versus not having him. But I'm not going to sit here and say, like, up, there goes the season. No chance of winning any games now with that Tanner Mangum 5-star recruit quarterback,
Tyler Mangum.
With Tyler Mangum around, how are we going to ever make it happen? You know,
I'd love to have Taysom come back.
Oh, absolutely.
But I'm already in the place where. That's if he comes back and plays, that's gravy at this point.
Gravy. I'm with you. Matt, on the coaching staff side, let me get to this here. Apparently, Kalani Sitake has gotten his person that he is interested in doing the football operations role, which is Jack Dumani. Dumani? Do you remember how to say it?
Dumani? I think it's Dumani.
Dumani?
Oh,
Dumuni. You're right. I'm like, I'm not saying this correctly. I knew I wasn't saying it correctly. He's played defensive back for the Cougars in the 90s. To talk about him coming back, he was around for signing day. Do you have an opinion on this potential hire?
I think it's great. You know, and if you go to this to the story, whose story is it that we're talking about here? But if you go into some of the discussion around
Harman.
This guy's a hire, Dick Harmon's
friend of the podcast,
Dick Harmon. I think the connection to Kahuku is a big deal. You know, I think that when you look at high schools that have produced the most NFL players, I think that's a very telling statistic to see that this is tied with 4 other schools with the most. This was a big place. This used to be a place that we recruited a lot of players from. So I think that's important. And I also still love the connections between the history of the program and the current staff.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And I think it's great. And I think Sitake is bringing in guys that are going to do a good job of connecting with the athletes that we're trying to recruit now.
Yeah. And we've talked about this before. I don't think everybody needs to have a connection, but it's really kind of cool to have a lot of people that do.
Yeah. Because the thing that I think is the one of the pieces that's really helpful for this is they know players from all eras of BYU football.
Yes.
And so being able to reach out into that network, being able to talk about that when you're making recruiting visits to kids, being able to really pass on the passion for the history of the program, I think is a really big deal. And I'm not, this isn't a knock on Bronco Mendenhall, but I think to a certain extent some of that was lost. during the Mendenhall era. I think there were some pockets and some times. And the Croton era is probably what did it, right? I think there are some things that Bronco Mendenhall gets criticized for that are really a result of what happened during Croton's time. And but I'd love to see that stuff coming back and those types of connections being reformed. So I think this is a big deal. You know, if you get the right guy into a position like this, it can be a very big deal. If you get a mediocre guy, then it's, you know, it's kind of meh. But I think this one could be a big deal.
So, Matt, another transfer coming our way. Joe Brown, a guard from the University of Miami, the actual U. He's transferring to BYU, won't be eligible next year. Another transfer from a P5 school coming and started some for the University of Miami. Matt, that's all we got. We did 20-some-odd minutes of not BYU, but then we did a bunch of minutes of BYU.
We did, and we even got in this last piece about our new 6'4", 320-pound offensive line.
Yeah, Ty Detmer says he wants big O-linemen. He wants a massive NFL, you know, offensive line. Hey, Matt,
go back to the great offensive lines that we've had. They were all huge.
Yeah, we had. Remember, they used to do this almost all the time in Detmer's time period. They would have the
all through the '90s, all through the '90s.
Yes, the average offensive line at BYU versus, say, they pick one NFL team, and we were like 10 pounds heavier on average.
And every game they would do, this is what the BYU offensive line weighs total versus the total weight of the opposing defensive line.
Yes, yes.
Or front five that. Or whatever.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
We were always just huge, mean, bruiser guys. And that's, I think that's what, you know, and I was hoping that when 2J came in, that's what I was hoping for, was this resurgence of an offensive line culture at BYU. We just didn't quite get there. Maybe it was a matter of time or timing or whatever. But I like the fact that we're still pushing in that direction now.
Well, and at least in his first iteration, though I think this changed a little bit the second time, is Robert and I had been of that Texas Tech school as a coach where you spread the offensive line. Remember, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now big spreads.
He changed that. But those offensive lines were built more around speed, right? Ty Detmer seems, at least verbally right now, it's talking about strength and size instead of speed. And you know, it'll be interesting to see how that works, because it can go both ways, right? You get big, and if you get too slow, you can find some outside rushers nowadays that can Bronson Kafusi types that can give you a hard time. Matt, I'm going to get you out on the last thing though. Tom Homo, it's now a week and a half old. Had kind of a state of where things are at interview session with some media members. He mentioned in this, and how much did this break your heart? He said, we are not going back to the Royal Blue.
It makes me sad, but I'm also not buying it. Have you seen the basketball uniforms?
It's a throwback. They're going to do this a few times a year.
Right.
In baseball, but basketball, you know what? Football.
And I think that's exactly the way to do it.
Yeah, I like it.
I think you mix up the uniforms a little bit. I don't think you got to do an Oregon or even like a Boise State type of thing, but I think you mix it up a little bit. You work the royal blue in, and you just it's part of the rotation.
Yeah. So you
and you
the
bring
blacks.
It out and bring it out a handful of times a year, 2, 3, 4 times.
Yeah, 2, 3, 4 times. Oh, you're crazy. They're gonna bring it out max twice.
But where do the black twice. Uniforms go?
They're gonna keep doing those. Don't you like those?
I do. I do like those.
I'm a fan of the black uniform. I actually would like to see them do a blue helmet.
Yes. Yes, needs to happen.
I want to see a royal blue uniform. It's not a throwback. It's like BYU 2099, you know? And do like, you know, shiny, iridescent. Iridescent's the wrong word. But you know what I'm saying?
Like chrome, the chrome
look
and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah, the chrome look on the royal blue.
Yeah.
I know, Tom Homo, I know you listen to this podcast. Make it happen, Tom.
There's some really cool things they could do with the uniforms that you wouldn't want to do every time. Like we've talked about an oversized cougar head with the sailor hat on the side of one side of the helmet, kind of what Boise State does a lot, you know, those types of things. I think there's a lot of fun stuff you could do that you just do once or twice a year.
But did you see those tweets from the BYU communications guy who is basically telling people, media members, to stop using the floating cougar head from the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, that, they need to fix that with the media packages. And I don't know how all that works. And I don't know why ESPN, you know, we're supposed to have this great relationship with ESPN. I don't know why they still use it sometimes. I get a tan highlight sometimes out of ESPN that I don't understand.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you. Let's get rid of that floating cougar head. If you're going to use a floating cougar head, better have a sailor hat on it.
That's the only floating cougar head that I count.
That's right.
As a mascot for my alma mater.
That's right. That's right, brother. All right. Well, thank you guys for downloading and listening. Of course, we encourage you to join the conversation on Twitter. Follow us at BYU_RiseShout. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/RiseAndShout. The conversation there is more of kind of a whisper. We don't have a lot of followers yet. But, hey, join the club, man. Is that an endorsement or what?
You can get in on the ground floor.
Get in on the ground floor, man. You can say, back in the day, we were at the beginning of this. You can be like Justin D. Sweeney.
Yeah, I was about to say that. You could be the Sweeney of our Facebook page.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's still open.
Sweeney.
Sweeney could still be the Sweeney of our Facebook page. Of course, get all of your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. We will be back next week. More hoops. I'm sure more football. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for listening. And we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars.
Sees it rise with a game.